Money FM 89.3, best of the breakfast huddle. Mind your business with the breakfast huddle, only on Money FM 89.3.
Money FM 89.3. Good morning. It's the Breakfast Huddle. I'm Elliot Danker. It's time now for Mind Your Business. Now, a founder of any company tends to have a problem that they're passionate about, which is the resilience to endure the highs and lows of entrepreneurship and the propensity to meet people and attract talent to their companies. Now, there are three foundations that have underpinned and molded successful entrepreneurs, and they continue to hold true, especially in the face of COVID-19. And you know what? Maybe even likely future events that may similarly present unprecedented challenges to businesses. Our next guest started his own marketing agency back in 2011. Now, fast forward 2019, his agency was acquired and he made a successful exit. But how did he know it was time for him to let go in that sense? Well, on the line with me is Prantik Mazumdar, who is the managing director, CXM Group Dense Singapore. Good morning. How are you?
I'm good. How are you doing?
Very good. And what an interesting story you're about to get into. Prantik, first of all, just to sort of set the stage, you are an award-winning entrepreneur, marketer, investor. Share with us a little bit about your journey. And for you, I mean, what were some of the standout moments?
No, thank you. It's absolutely been, you know, a very privileged journey. And, you know, it all began, what, 21 years ago when I stepped into Singapore to pursue a degree in computer engineering at the National University of Singapore. I honestly never thought I would have the opportunity to do these variety of different things. And I guess one common thing that has stayed true is just to sort of be open-minded and, you know, be open to opportunities and give different things a shot. So my career, you know, I started with Enterprise Singapore, then I worked for a couple of small, medium enterprises before starting and co-founding Happy Marketer, the marketing agency that we ran for a while before selling to Dentsu, the largest advertising and marketing conglomerate from Asia Pacific. So it's been fascinating. And since, you know, we sold that company in 2019, and I'm now part of the Dentsu Singapore team, on the side, I've always been very passionate about startups. And, you know, the Southeast Asia growth story is poignant, and I've had the good opportunity of also wearing the hats of a investor and advisor to various of the startups that are sort of poised for growth in the region.
Yeah, but it was your foundations that really set the tone, because you built one of the most awarded independent digital marketing services firm here in Southeast Asia. I mean, at what point did you identify, hey, digital marketing, this is the way to go, this trend is going to hit us thick and fast? At what point, and what was that sort of story like?
Yeah, so, you know, before starting, I used to work for another digital marketing company called Pinstorm. And I think there were two moments where I felt or thought that, look, I think digital is here to grow and stay and change the way we sort of operate. You know, I think one was the advent of the Google search engine. I think because fundamentally, if you look at the trajectory of advertising and marketing, it's always been very push-driven, whether it's television, print, radio, you know, ads sort of come in between the original content. But I think when I sort of experienced Google search, I realized the ads or the content that shows up is a function of what you're searching. So it's a bit of an act, you know, it's a bit of ads that sort of show up when you search for something. And hence, the Google ads tend to be, you know, far more relevant, and the click-through rates tend to be much higher. So I think, you know, when I saw that happening around 2006, 2007, that was a particular moment. And the other is, you know, when I saw large enterprises such as Google, Facebook, HubSpot, Salesforce, the big tech companies set up base in Singapore, that's when I realized, wow, something's clearly happening. And all of this was around the 2007-2009 period. Yeah. That was a micro factor and one macro factor, which sort of gave me an indication that, you know, we're entering a different era.
Yeah, I have a lot of friends in marketing, and I observe two camps during that time, right? You've got the first camp that's panicking and trying to figure out digital marketing. This is a whole new ball game. And then you've got the other camp that goes, yeah, no, the internet, social media, no way that can take over. Well, they were wrong, clearly. How do you approach this whole idea of a cookie-less world that's coming very, very soon? I mean, it does pose a bit of a challenge, yet security at the same time.
Spot on. Yeah. I mean, you know, I guess there are a few elements that we're all grappling with: cookie-less, privacy laws. And, you know, fundamentally, what all of this is really boiling down to is permission-driven marketing. You've got to have the consent. And I think, to be very honest, for consumers, it's the right thing to do. Even for brands, this is great, because this will sort of push us to be prudent. Because the whole idea of cookie-less is, you know, you don't want to be tracking consumers' and their online behavior without their permission. You don't want to be using consumer data without their permission. And to me, all of this, as we sort of enter this cookie-less world and the world of PDPA and CCPA, the idea is we need to, A, be collecting data with the consent of the consumers. And once we do that, we've got to be dishing out relevant contextual marketing messages. Yeah. And I think, A, this is prudent, this is right. And B, this will help brands be, you know, responsible, as well as the marketing will be way more targeted. So I know it sounds scary, but I think this is the right direction.
I mean, in a more simpler way to look at it, I mean, you can do a lot more when you have consent, you know, especially when it comes to data. That's the most precious commodity today, in my own opinion. I'm curious with regard to Happy Marketer. So Dentsu Singapore acquired it in 2019. I think it's been rebranded to Merkel Singapore, if I've got that right. Tell me about
That's
this
correct.
Process. And, you know, at the start of the interview, I said, deciding when to let go. Was it difficult for you?
Very, very. Because, you know, when we began, to be honest, we never started with an exit in mind. We're a pure services business. It grew rapidly. And to be honest, like with many great things in life, this happened by accident and chance. So we got connected with a gentleman called Ted Ray, who used to lead Merkel Asia Pacific out of Singapore through a common friend. And when that conversation happened, you know, to be honest, it took us 2 years to make that decision because it was not part of the plan and we were not ready. But as we sort of started engaging with Merkel, their local and regional leadership, and also the Dentsu Singapore team, I think what happened is two things. We realized that there's a lot of commonality in terms of our product culture, in terms of our vision for Southeast Asia. You know, the timing seemed good because the whole perspective of sort of selling and, you know, being part of a larger umbrella was to accelerate our growth in Southeast Asia. So the Southeast Asia conversation, to be honest, is where we felt, look, if we had to achieve what we intend to achieve in lesser time, this acquisition path made sense. But to your point, never easy. It was a very, very hard decision as co-founders because, you know, you're not just ready. You're never ready to let go, to be honest.
Yeah. Well, you've integrated yourself into Dentsu. I'll talk a little bit about that in just a sec. But 2 years, first thing that comes to mind, it must have been distracting while all these talks were going on. You still got to keep the entrepreneurial flame going. You still got to think about growth, et cetera, et cetera.
You're right. We had to continue being Happy Marketer co-founders by day, grow the business. And it's only in the evenings that Rachit, my co-founder, and myself, you know, we would sort of grapple with, hey, do we do it? Do we not? And it's an emotional roller coaster because you've got to convince yourself, your families, your employees, your business partners. And, you know, we've gone through various cycles of let's do it, but let's not do it. Let's do it, but let's do it this way. And that was fairly turbulent. So, yes, it was very difficult because you had to sort of keep your eye on the business. And thankfully, I must say, thankfully, all of this happened pre-COVID, because had this happened during the pandemic, I think it would have been even harder. So I think in all, good timing.
Yeah. And you've managed to integrate yourself into Dentsu Singapore. I wonder what that must be like. It still allows you to sort of keep an eye on your baby in that sense.
It does. So the way it's kind of structured is, you know, we're part of this, the Dentsu Singapore family. And the good thing is we're allowed to sort of operate and grow this independently within the larger umbrella. So whilst we have to sort of become the big company, you know, and I must be honest, you know, there are teething challenges of any integration. Mm-hmm. But I think in the last couple of years, we've managed to sort of integrate fairly well across HR, finance systems, technology, people, all of that. What's happened is, again, going back to the original objective of, you know, being able to sell across Southeast Asia, we've got a larger stage for our band, so to speak, as one of my colleagues would say.
Okay. Prantik, I'm curious because you're an investor as well. That's one of the other hats that you wear. But as a marketer, as someone that's looking at all these sectors and trends, how does that affect you as an investor? What does it make you keep an eye out for?
You know, it helps me keep an eye and focus on growth. So I think when I wear my investor hat, especially in product-led companies in Southeast Asia, what I'm always keen to look at are two things. A, what is the problem that they're trying to solve? How large is that problem? B, how are they sort of going about tackling growth, and especially organic growth? Because one of the things about digital, usually people focus on is paid ads, which is great. But to me, I love to look at our founders maximizing non-paid ad options, such as search engine optimization, analytics, email marketing? Are they sort of maximizing those levers before sort of putting their feet on the gas, so to speak?
Yeah.
Because if they're doing that, you know, the metric I would typically look at is, what is the ratio of lifetime value to cost of acquiring a customer? Because, you know, acquiring a new customer is expensive. And hence, once you acquire, you want to extract maximum value. So I try and use my marketer hat to say, I love founders who try to maximize non-paid advertising options before going all guns blazing on digital ads.
So in a way, digital ads can be a bit of a shortcut, right? Because you need to understand your SEO first. And if you're able to maximize that, I get where you're coming from. Be able to use the skills that you have. That's great. I want to get your thoughts on this. How can a startup leverage fundraisers to create, you know, a positive social impact, improve access to things like global healthcare, education, employment? What's your opinion of this?
No, absolutely critical. I think in today's world, all of these ideally should be part of your business model, if it's possible. If not, you know, obviously there are ways to sort of run fundraisers or CSRs. But I love businesses where inherently there is a part of your business model which either, you know, caters to some of the United Development, you know, Sustainable Development Goals. There are 17. You could just pick one saying healthcare or education or sustainable energy. If that is the case, because I love business models which sort of, you know, build in some element of sustainability or what we at Dentsu call force for good and force for growth. Because I genuinely believe that, you know, it should not be a charitable act. I think you could be a business that's making a lot of profit, and some of that profit is being plowed into do good, because eventually the business will benefit from it.
And it's also a fine line, right? Because some people do it because it's trendy.
yeah. That's true. That doesn't last long, though.
Yeah. Pratik, I understand that providing sports consulting services across digital rights and sponsorships, is this something that you're looking to venture into? Does it catch your interest?
Absolutely. Because, you know, for me, anything that is sports, digital and tech, that's very, very exciting. I mean, I love my cricket. So, you know, weekends are usually for cricket. So, but obviously I follow other sports. So absolutely. I think any opportunity which, you know, sort of capitalizes on the digitization of sport, on the digital broadcasting of sport, and leveraging technology to sort of not just consume sport, but to analyze sport. And I think I'm a big believer that data-driven can, you know, and I'm seeing this across sports. You know, the money ball is a very famous notion, you know, in baseball. But even in other sports, data and tech will play a huge role in sort of helping you spot talent, helping you nurture them. So, yeah, two sides of the coin, broadcasting and media, but also data tech to sort of unearth and nurture talent.
No, it's quite amazing. They already do this, especially with the NBA. And as a viewer, you can sort of take part in the money ball process in that sense. You're able to follow just one player, get all the stats. That can definitely expand into your high school leagues before they start the draft even.
Certainly. In the US, in the West, it's already part of the process. I'm beginning to see this happen in Asia now where you know, the tool and technology is the same. As long as the sporting authorities have the budget and the know-how, you've got, and especially in sport, right, you've got to start early because, you know, sports people, unfortunately, most sports, you know, in athletics, in soccer, basketball, you don't have too long a career window. So you would rather sort of, you know, start early, catch them young and spread your nets and wings early. And absolutely, I think this should start early from the school level.
I was going to ask that in Asia, what you're seeing, especially, you know, with Singapore wanting to build a really a stronger international football team. But you're right, data is the way to go, the most precious around. Pratik, I really appreciate your time. Pratik Mazumdar, who is the Managing Director, CXM Group, Dentsu Singapore. Thank you so much for your time this morning. Take care. Have a great week
ahead.
Thank
you. Have a great week, Elliot. Thank you so much.
To listen to more great interviews, download our podcasts at moneyfm893.sg or download our audio app. That's AWEDIO. Available on Google Play or the App Store.